I want to bring a lesson tonight on humbleness, being humble. We've talked about that before. It's one of those things that the Bible talks a lot about it. And since it talks a lot about it, I thought we could talk about it a few times. So we'll get into that. First, I've got two commercials for you. The first commercial, you're invited to, between now and Sunday, think of people in your family, your group of friends, and people you work with who are either unsaved or unchurched. Write their name and address on a card and get it to me or Sister Artisa, and we will start working those names during our outreach. And really, there, none of us should have anybody in our group that of people that we know that we don't know whether or not they're saved. Now, I don't mean we can make them saved. You know, we can't make them get saved, but we will work with them the best they'll let us if you'll make a list. And I know that's easy for me to stand up here and say for you to do that. You got to go home and do it. But if you would, anybody you know that's not saved or anybody you know that's not going to church, put their name and address down and we'll do our best to get with them at some point on one of the outreaches. Which brings me to the next thing. Of course, we mentioned Saturday, 10:30. Brother Isaac, I don't know if you have, I'm sure you have noticed, he's virtually done everything but get on his knees and beg you to come on visitation. And there's lots of ways that can be done. It don't have to be Saturday. If you can't come on Saturday, or if you can't walk, or you know, if you've got other impairments, he's got a way to help us, or to obviously help the Lord. So that's the second commercial. Pray about that and let him know that you want to help. He'll find something. Okay. If we would, let's put up Philippians 2:3-11. Brother Aaron, would you read that for us?
Got some new eyes today. I will try.
Uh-oh, okay. Putting you on the spot.
Let's see if I can find it first. Philippians 2:3-11.
Yes. 3-11. Thank you. You know, you might, some of you here might be thinking, why in the world do we have a lesson on humbleness? I'm the most humble person here. I don't need anything on humbleness. Well, just to let you know, you're the target audience for this. But you know, we all do kind of think that we are humble. And we all, you know, and I think probably church people are the humblest people on the planet. That don't mean that we're all perfect by any means, but we're much more likely to be humble than some of the people out in the world. But if you think you're really humble, let's have a test. Picture yourself down here at the corner store, and you've gone up to buy the pack of gum you're bringing to church Sunday. And a guy comes up and sets up on the counter one of them boxes of beer that I don't see how they carry them. They plop that up on the counter. What's the first thing that goes through your mind? If it's Look at that dirty bum. That's not humbleness, is it? You know, we tend to look at them and rate them based on ourselves. The first thing we ought to do is what? Pray. Well, is that the easy thing? Is that the thing we normally do? It's kind of like, you know, Brother Isaac's talked about not putting the fishies on your car if you can't control yourself when you're out driving. Of course, I wouldn't put a fish on there anyway, but the way we handle our thoughts, even when other people don't know it, helps tell us or helps show us whether or not we're humble. Well, we see here, it says here, to let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, and to esteem others better than themselves. So if we are to do this in lowliness of mind, what that's really getting at there is that we're not to act like the world and cheat people, go out with the intention of cheating people, mistreating people. We're to be looking out for their good. And sometimes that's hard, because when we look out for their good, it doesn't always look out for our good. But that's what we're to do. We're to work, and we're to deal with people without strife. We're not to be the fighting kind of people, are we? We're supposed to be people that care about others. James 4 and 6. Sister Trina, would you read that one for us? Well, now, Trina can enunciate these words. That's why I picked her. Boy, she can get it out there for us. Yeah. Four and six. Thank you. What do we, as Americans, we talk about our pride for our country, and I love my country, but we have that desire for pride kind of built into us, don't we? Of course, we're in a setting where we don't want to admit our pride, but we all have pride. You know, you're proud of this, you're proud of that. We want to, as an American, we tend to work towards pride way more than we should. But he says he giveth more grace, where it says he resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. God is very particular about how he wants us to view ourselves. He gives us the Bible. You know, we're told that the Bible is to uses a mirror to judge ourselves by. He wants us to judge ourselves so he doesn't have to judge us. And one of the first steps, what was salvation? What's one of the first things that comes along before you can be saved? You got to recognize you're a sinner, but you got to do something else. What's that? We got to humble ourselves. And if you won't humble yourself, you got a problem. You know, that's one of the problems for the rich man, was the humbling of himself. He put his value on his value. And the Lord expects us to put our value on him. Have you ever been brought over the course of your life to the point that you had to say, Lord, I know I'm nothing. And if it isn't for you, I'm not going to make it. Whether it's money or some life trauma or something else. If we haven't ever come to that point, that's a problem. We need the Lord. He is there to help us. We need to be humble enough to realize that what we have, that what we've been blessed with, he blessed us with it. A lot of times we get things and we say, look what we've got. And we're proud of ourselves when we should be proud of the Lord instead of ourselves. So it says that he gives grace unto the humble. Do you want grace? Well, I want grace. I ask for it every day. And we need to be humble. Luke 14 and 11. For whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humble himself shall be exalted. What? If we make ourselves lowly, if we make ourselves humble, we get exalted, we get lifted up. See, we've talked about many times in classes and in sermons about how we're to be a peculiar people. Here is one of the roots of our peculiarness. Well, we are, for us to be peculiar to the people, we need to be humble. And when we humble ourselves, at some point we will receive a great reward from the Lord. Now, he rewards us on earth, but he also will reward us in heaven, will he not? There's a much greater reward waiting for us there than what he's given us here. I mean, this is such a wonderful world to live in the United States. Now, you might say, oh, the government, I hate it, all this stuff. But, you know, I can go home, I can just pick about anything to eat I want. I've got a good bed, I've got hot air, heat. Boy, there's a lot of people in the world that don't have that. We've still got a lot to be thankful for. But humbling ourselves for the Lord is the best way to stay on track with what he wants from our lives. Proverbs 22 and 4 says, by humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. So, would you say, I'm promising you riches if you're humble? Yes, but not necessarily riches here. The Lord's pretty careful who he gives riches to, is he not? Remember what I said a minute ago about people that gain up a bunch of stuff start thinking, well, boy, look what I've got. The Lord knows who can handle it and who can't. The Lord's not promising anybody a big bank account. Now, that doesn't mean he's not willing to do that for you, but you got to prove to him that you can handle it, that you don't put your faith in that big bank account, because that big bank account could get you in a lot of trouble. Matthew 23 and 12. Somebody find that and read that if you would. Sounds like what Luke 14 just said a minute ago, doesn't it? Now, this is funny because, let's think about this for a minute. Luke wrote one. Matthew wrote one. I've got quotes from Peter, John, and James. Now, what do you remember that the apostles were doing and Jesus came to them and said, what were y'all arguing about? Do you remember what they were arguing about? Who's going to be the greatest? Hey, man, I want a good position here. Which one of us is going to be the boss? That was really important. There was not much humility involved in the questions they were asking. And you know, they were so ashamed they didn't want to answer him, did they? But now these same people who were at one point wanting to know who was going to be the best or who was going to have the best position, they're now saying something totally different. They're saying, oh, humility is the way to go. Being humble is the way to go. Not thinking too much of myself is the way to go. What happens in a church when someone gets to thinking they're pretty good or that they're really good? They kind of start wanting to run the church, do they not? You know, we've had a great time of spiritual things here. We've not had this problem, but there are churches that wind up divided because One side wants to go with one guy, and one side wants to go with another guy, and those two people aren't willing to allow themselves to be humble enough to say, for the good of the church, I'm not going to let this happen. They're going to fight their fight. Vain, what we mentioned earlier about the strife, we should never be involved in strife. Now, it is definitely a hard thing to stay out of, but it's something we're to do. Colossians 3:12 says, put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, and long-suffering. Again, humbleness of mind. It is a way of thinking. It's a way that our mind, or a situation our mind has to get into, where we don't think, look what I did. You know, there are some people in this church that work themselves to death. And they could easily get to thinking, you know what? I'm the best worker here. That's not what we're supposed to do. You know what, too? When you're the only worker here, you're supposed to just go ahead and do your job. The Lord will work everything else out. Romans 12:3. For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly. What's the only way you can think soberly? It's impossible to not be sober. Let me say this. I'm going to say this better than I'm going to say it. If you don't ever drink, you can't not be sober. You know, you're going to be sober if you're not drinking, okay? So that's really important. When you're sober, you think right. When you're not sober, you think wrong, or you have a tendency to. So to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith, think of yourself as someone that had to be saved rather than someone who's something special. 1 Peter 5:5, you know, and I love Peter, boy. There wasn't anybody any more of a rascal there at one point than Peter, was there? Peter really did, you know, he was a colorful character. And I've thought several times about people I've known that have gone to sea in various ways, and they have been some very colorful people. And Peter, he was something, but turned out to be a great guy. He says, likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder, yea, all of you, be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility, for God resisteth the proud, and giving grace to the humble. How do we subject ourselves one to another? First of all, who was Peter writing this to? We know that all the books were written to church. All the New Testament books were church books. And Peter was writing to a church. He said to be subject one to another. What's the first thing that's going to be required for you to be subject one to another? Humility. Be humble. What makes us subject to one another? Do what? Yes, that's right. When we become subject to one another, when we work together, do we not? When we care about each other and the other person's needs. John 3:30. Won't you tell me who said this? He must increase, but I must decrease. John the Baptist. John the Baptist didn't have any humility, did he? Can you think of something John said that besides this verse that was showing a great sign of humility? What else did he say about him? Yes. Well, that's a lot of humility there, wouldn't you say? But he says he must increase and I must decrease. John came as a forerunner for the Lord. And now when the Lord came, he said, I've got to pull back because my job's over. The Lord's here and what I was doing is done. Humble yourselves in the James 4 and 10. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. It's amazing to me the people that I've seen over the course of my life, and I know you've probably seen it too. They get into different situations in life where life's just terrible. I mean, they've got all kinds of things going wrong, and rather than turn to the Lord, you know, they've maybe been in church at different points in their life, and rather than come back to church, try to get straightened out with the Lord, they decide that they're going to try to just tough it out on their own. But if they would humble themselves, it says he would lift them up. Whenever you see people out here that for instance, there's been people that have come here to this church, and this just happened not very long ago. Saw in their life some terrible things that were going on, and I thought, you know, really, all that it would take to straighten that up is you to come back and get straight and ask the Lord to help you, and he would help you. But that wasn't their option. They thought that the best thing to do was just to continue in what had got them in that situation. They didn't want to humble themselves. It's hard to humble yourself as an American, but the Lord promises us so much if we will be humble people. Jeremiah 9:23. Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might, let not the rich man glory in his riches. Now I would tell you here, I'd even add, and I'm not adding to the Bible, but a perfect example of this is someone who considers themselves to be very attractive, man or woman, they sometimes put their stock in that just as much as a rich person or a wise, someone who thinks themselves being very wise, and they put their faith in their beauty or their things. I know we've all known people over the course of our life that thought they were just super good looking, super rich, or super smart, and that became their God. They had no interest in God because I can do what I need to. Now he says, let not the wise man glory in wisdom. One of the things that my girls, when they've gone to college, they've come back and told me stories, and I'm sure you've all seen this, but a lot of college professors get so intelligent that they don't believe in God. They get to thinking, God don't make sense. God's not logical. And I will agree. There's nothing logical in my mind about how God has done things. But I'm pretty tickled about that. What in the world is a logic for a God to be willing to come suffer for us? Or to come at the time he did? Lands, I would not have picked at a time where there was no air conditioning. You know, I'd have come back when there was some good cars and air conditioning and stuff like that, TV. No, he came back at the worst of times to show us he could do it. He did it for us. But in any event, wisdom takes the place sometimes of our humility. We get thinking, well, you know, we're pretty smart. We can think things out ourselves. And one of the first things that'll get you in trouble is when you go out and make a decision on your own without asking the Lord's help on the decision. You know, you can do everything right. I've seen this in my own life. Boy, you know, you can go out and buy a car wash. You know, you run that car wash just exactly like you've seen other people run it that makes good money. And you don't make much money. What's the deal? Well, you better have asked the Lord beforehand, is this okay with you? It's always important to have his wisdom, not my wisdom. Ephesians 4 and 2. With all lowliness and meekness, with long suffering, forbearing one another in love. And this back to the church again. You know, sometimes we're going to get on each other's nerves. Maybe like my voice is doing to you right now. But you got to forgive me about it, because, you know, I'd guarantee you I don't want it to be this way. And there's other things that happen in a church that will cause us to get on each other's nerves. But when we love each other, we kind of tend to manage to. Now, you know, if I was at home, I'd gripe at Kathleen if there was something she was doing I didn't like. But I'm not going to go get a divorce over, you know, I guarantee you there's been plenty of things that, you know, as anybody who's ever been married, there's been plenty of things that you'd like to gripe about, but we have to be long-suffering. Brenda's got that look like she thinks she's been really long-suffering.
She can't see it from this side.
Oh! Proverbs 11:2. When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. You know, well, there's a lot of ways we could go with that. We always know the old saying that I'm sure everybody remembers, pride cometh before the fall, and it definitely does work that way. The lowly wisdom part of that verse, it kind of, when I was looking at that, it made me think about the old saying about how much more you can learn by listening than talking. And that's very true. Wise people aren't always the first ones to open their mouth. A lot of times they'll listen to what you've got to say. A fellow has taken a class before with me. It was verbal communication. You know, we are nonverbal communication. We would study how to study people and see how they position themselves and what they do with facial expressions and their body movements, to where you can kind of read people to see what they're thinking. Well, even better than that is just to listen to them for a minute. You'll learn real quick. You know, I've been places expecting to hear, you know, most of the places I go, most of the people I talk to run down the government. And I don't have any problem with that too much, but I was at a house one day, and that's what I was expecting. A woman had said a thing or two that kind of led me to believe that was going to be her next response. And then she really stood up for the president. She really talked about what a great guy he was. And I'm glad I had kept my mouth shut and just listened to what she was saying, because I might have said something that she wouldn't have liked. When I go out to appraise somebody's house, it's not my, I'm there as essentially kind of like an employee, so it's not my place to be there telling them how to live their life. I'm just there to do that job and to get away. But I do from time to time get to ask someone. They'll say something about the Lord, or they'll say something about church. Where you go to church at? You know, if they open the door, I'll definitely mention it. Along this same line, Matthew 5:5 says, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." So back to what we're starting off with here. When we are humble, it makes us what? Humble people are meek. Humbleness helps us to be meek. And we know that, well, let's look here at Numbers 12 and 3. Ryan, am I jumping too far for you to be able to get that one? Now the man Moses was very meek above all men which were upon the face of the earth. It's so hard to imagine Moses meek. You know, we've all seen Cecil B. DeMille's movie, and Moses don't look weak. Charlton Heston is not weak, but he wasn't Moses. That's a poor illustration of what Moses really was. Moses was a great man, but Moses was meek. Moses wasn't looking to fight. You know, but he did lose that meekness at one point, didn't he? When he struck the rock. But Moses was meek. Being humble and being meek puts us in a position for the Lord to use us, does it not? We can't ever be in a position for Him to use us unless we're humble and meek. He expects that of us. Now, you say, well, boy, He's asking a lot. What did He do? Boy, if He didn't set the example for being humble and meek, I don't know who did. You go pulling the hair out of my little bit of hair I got here, I'm not going to be just standing there. I mean, unless you got me roped down, we're going to fist fight probably. And I'm supposed to be meek, but the Lord showed us meekness in its true form. And He expects us all to be humble, just like He proved to us that we could do it, and meekness. Americans, we look at that as weakness, do we not? I mean, a lot of times the world sees a meek person or a humble person as someone to kick. You know, that's, that person there, they won't even stand up for themselves. The Lord never told us we couldn't stand up for ourselves. But that's not to be the first thing we look to do. You know, sometimes if you're cornered by a bear, you think the Lord says thinks you're supposed to just let the bear eat you? If you can get away from that bear or you can shoot that bear, do it. The Lord doesn't expect us just to be doormats, but He does expect us to do everything we can to be humble and to be meek. Unless someone else has any other comments about that, that's probably about all my voice is going to make it tonight. Well, let's all stand. We'll have a word of prayer if there's anybody that needs to talk to one of the deacons or anything going on in your life. You got a problem, you'd like to talk to someone. We've got a couple of deacons here in church. They'd be tickled to death to talk to you. So don't leave here if you've got something going on you need some help with. We sure don't want that.